Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Hot Nerd Podcast. Today, we are continuing on with our What Now miniseries, and we are talking about safety not being the absence of accidents, but the presence of capacity, margin, safe criteria. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at thehopnerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast, episode number 369, where we are continuing on with our What Now miniseries. And if you don't know, if you haven't been around for these, I would encourage you to go back and listen to like the whole bucket full of these that we have put out around the Hop principles. And now we are working through the ideas of safety differently. And if you need a little bit of a sales pitch on why you should listen to these, it helps to answer exactly that question. The question sounds like this: a human organization performance. I like these. I just like this is cool, and I get this stuff. And what now? What do I do with my hands? How do I make this work? What is? I need action. It's that. Yeah, it's all that kind of stuff. Now it's some ideas. Right. The ideas here, the stuff that we talk about, you know, these principles, these ideas of safety differently, the 10 ideas to make safety suck less, the ideas from Aren't You Curious, the Operationally Curious Leader, my latest book, if you're interested in that. All these things that we talk about, they are ideas, they're beliefs, they're assumptions. Right. It's the how we think about things. Now, this is an important part of our conversation because this how we think about things, we forget that that's the important part. Mm-hmm. It is. The how we think about things directly leads to the how we do things. And leadership is a great example. The how we think about things directly leads to how we lead things. Yeah, something like that. You get my point. So these are some things that I have seen work well, either with my hands directly on these particular things in an organization working internally, where I spent the vast majority of my life doing this stuff, internal, the frustration, the pain, the success, the joy, the awesomeness, all that stuff, bringing this stuff to life in the real world, not shout out a consultant here like some out there. Been doing this for a long time internally. And some of these ideas also come from stuff that I've been helping clients with, stuff that they are doing, and things that are working well for them. Keyword, working well for them, meaning that it might not all work so perfect or great for you. And that's okay. These are some ideas. Back to the point, the main thing being the how we think about things. Because with better beliefs, ideas, and assumptions grow better approaches, tactics, leadership. Yeah. That's a fancy pants way of saying that these are some great ideas, but you still have to figure it out on your own. Yeah. We're always looking for that easy peasy check sheet. Give me the 5 actions and then a human and organizational performance excellence will be yours. Again, back to maybe some folks being shat out of the womb consultants. Some people will tell you that you just follow their check sheet. Yeah, but that's never going to generate sustainable success for you. We know this stuff. Now, before we get too deep into today's episode, do me a favor, head over to the website, thehopnerd.com, www.thehopnerd.com. Yeah, now this is the part that you normally fast forward through, but hear me out. Head over there, click on the resources page. Take a look at the very first thing that you see that says like downloadable videos or something like that. And can you believe it? It's exactly that. Yeah, people ask me for the videos that we post all over social media, the funny ones, you know, the ones that star Daryl or the ones that highlight absurdity in our work world. helping to open up conversations around really kind of wacky things that we do with a little bit of comedy. Yeah, and even the ones that aren't kind of the comedy things. All that stuff is for you to download right there. People ask me for these videos and say, you should make these available for download. And then I get to have the conversation where I say, these have been available for download for years. And I talk about it a bunch. And I know the internet is weird and you don't see everything, but they're there. So spread the word. Help me spread the word. Yeah, you can download them right there if you need something for your next safety meeting, if you need something to kick off that next something, if you're looking for a nice little funny social media post, go download it. Use them. That's exactly why they're there. You know the rules that we put around those things. The rules are very, very, very simple. Use them for good. Yeah, that's the main rule. Just use it for good. And number two, if you get a chance to like tag me in it, if you post it on social media, that helps me a ton. It helps us, you know, spread this message a little bit farther, a little bit wider. It helps get resources to people that might not realize that, hey, you know what? Sam has downloadable videos and they're super handy. Yeah, that kind of stuff. So a little tag on there, or a little like, hey, I got this at thehotnerd.com on your slide deck. If you're using it to kick off a meeting, again, it just helps us an absolute ton. But the main thing, use it for good. Do good with it. Yeah, yeah. And speaking of which, there's a whole bunch of other downloadable resources there. Just browse through a bunch of documents and stuff. Our new, I think it's CSCL, isn't what we call it? Our new response framework is over there as well, helping you to move from react to respond. Now, another thing you can do is head over to the Starting Points page. Just click Starting Points at the top of thehopnerd.com or go to thehopnerd.com/SP. And you can download sample questions from our card deck. How cool is that? It's a nice little handy-dandy PDF. You can go give those cards a shot. And you can also join the hundreds upon hundreds of organizations that are using our Starting Points card decks, our operationally curious questions, in a variety of ways, which is pretty stinking cool. You can get the original card decks over there. You can also get our learning journals and a bunch of other stuff. But probably most important of all, most popular of all these days, organizations are licensing the Starting Point card decks so they can customize, they can brand. We can come up with cool questions together that are a bit more specific to your organization. Yeah, pretty slick. And then when you add in on top of that, you get to produce them, you get to print them, you get to save a ton of cash. Yeah, how cool is that? Customization plus saving a bunch of money? Heck yeah, I like it, love it, gotta have it. You know, I never thought about the licensing part of the card decks until I started working with a few different organizations over the past year or so wanting to do exactly this. And it seems like that just seems to be the move with these card decks. Organizations, you guys, you get your hands on these things and you're like, what is this wacky card deck thing? And then you go play with them and you're like, holy crap, this works. This really helps us like bake in pre-event operational learning into our day-to-day. And people don't hate it. They actually want these things. Like, they've been asking for more of them, and we don't have to go out and just like demand that people use our tool. Yeah, they like it, they love it, they got to have more of it because it was built with leaders for leaders, so it does not suck. Yeah, it's handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy, does not suck, and it's useful to me. And when you start pulling in all those kind of things together, guess what? People use it. Yeah, so it usually starts with buying a card deck. Then it usually starts with buying like a bunch of card decks. And then it's like, holy crap, it'd be cool if we could customize these card decks. Well, guess what? You can. A really good example of this is I'm working with some of my friends, some of my buddies over at Decra. They just licensed a bunch of card decks to customize for their 100-year anniversary. You'll see more about this on social media, I'm sure, in the months to come, but they're slick. Yeah, and you know, when I say Decra, you think of that nice, like, black and green, the Decra logo and all, you know, that iconic branding, right? This big 100-year-old company, yeah. And so they're beautiful. The cards are beautiful, and they're packed full of operationally curious questions. And yeah, they're going to be pushing these things out on their big 100-year celebration thing. Heck yeah, congrats on the 100 years, Decra. That's freaking huge. And they're pushing these out in multiple languages. Yeah, it's just cool. So just an example of how we can help you with licensing Starting Points. Now, last but not least, If you need a hand coming up over the next little bit, I have been here. I have been there. I have been everywhere. That's how I didn't record a podcast last week, which, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I've been, it seems like over this past month, I have been in California and Tennessee. What I mean by that is I've been in California and Tennessee, like three times in Tennessee, six times in California over the past, like that's the only place where I've been. Like, it's weird how this stuff plays out, y'all. But you get this thing where, like, the month before that, it was like I was in Chicago, like twice a week, every week. Like, it was just, it's just weird. It's just, if there's a heat map, I don't know. It's just random, I'm sure. But it's just weird to me the way that that plays out. So I have been going back and forth between the beautiful, beautiful rolling hills of Tennessee and the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful varying terrains of California. All of this to tell you that if you need a hand, let me know sooner than later. You know the spiel here. Like, I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. I want to be able to come help you. Like, the thing that I hate the most, like the most about this process, is when you drop me a line or you shoot me a text and you're like, "Hey, Sam, come help us. We're really excited to have you. Like, we've been talking about wanting you here for a long time, and we've been planning this event for the past year. And, you know, it's a few months out from the event, so we're ready to let you know," or it's a few weeks out from the event, or it's a few days out from the event occasionally. I get it. Life's weird. I understand. I know how stuff works. Yeah, sometimes it has to be a few days before. I know. But the part that I hate is having to say no. Like, I'm already like triple booked that day. Like, I'm going to be in like Anaheim, back to being in California again, or I'm going to be, you know, in Brazil, or I'm going to be in Canada, or I'm going to be in South Dakota, and I can't be there. I'm sorry. Can you move the date? And it's like, no, we've been planning on this for a year. I'm sorry. Like, that's just how it works, y'all. You know, that's how it works. That's the fairest way to do this stuff. It's always got to be first come, first serve. Whoever locks down that date, that's where I'm going. So let me know sooner than later. If you need a hand on your hop journey, if you're looking for that next keynote speaker, if you need an advisor, if you need someone to come help you with that post-event or pre-event learning something, if you need that workshop on learning teams or the fundamentals of human and organizational performance, or you're wanting to do some strategy sessions, or if you're wanting somebody to come in and just walk through and do that operational learning and let you know where you're at, help you maybe highlight some of those blind spots that exist within our organizations, whether you're thinking about starting your HOP journey or you've been doing this journey for a few minutes and on and on and on and on and on, let me know, thehopnerd@gmail.com. You can learn more about some of the basic services that I offer over at the website. Now, the handy part about the website is you can click get a quote. Yeah. Most people like to go over and click book a consult, which means that you get to self-schedule some time on my calendar and we get to chat about how I can help you. How cool is that? Yeah. So let me know. I'd love to be a part of helping you bring human and organizational performance to life over the summer, moving into this fall and moving into 2026. Yeah, there's dates already going on in 2026, believe that or not. It's wild. Yeah, the calendar is like the wild, wild west. So again, sooner than later is always helpful. Okay, well, let's jump into today's episode. We kicked it off just a little bit, but let's continue on with our What Now mini-series, where we're talking about safety not being the absence of accidents, but safety being the presence of capacity. Here we go. All right, so if you ever asked, I get the theory, what now? You're in the right place. Now, before we get into this thing, I've got to give you that bit of a loose disclaimer, that loose warning, whatever we're calling it here. The first thing that I like to say here is that I don't know you. Yeah, I don't know you, and I don't know your organization. I don't know the particular context that your organization operates in. And this is a thing that we run into in our community, is that most of us are pretty leery about just issuing, like, here's the 12 things you do. Just go do these things, you'll be fine. We're leery about that because people will actually take it and just go do those 12 things and go, well, that didn't work. HOP sucks. And that's just not true. We understand that a list of 12 things or 5 things, as we'll talk about today, that's not the beginning. That's not the end. It's not the be-all, end-all. It's not that easy. Yeah, we know. We know that as people, we like to look for the secret handshake, the wiggity, wiggity, wiggity. Yeah, we like to look for that and think that, well, finally, when I discover that silver bullet, when I discover those five things, when I discover that check box list of human and organizational performance, that's what I need. And if I can't find that, I'm just going back to traditional safety because they'll give it to me. They'll give it to me. Yeah, they'll give me the list. Just do these things and you'll be fine. We know that's not how it works. And you know that's not how it works either. So who the hell am I to tell you what to do within your organization when I don't understand a damn thing about your organization? If I come out and I spend a whole bunch of time with you, helping you, we'll start to understand a whole bunch of damn things about your organization. But I'm just talking to you on a podcast. So take everything in here with a grain of salt. I think there's some stinking good ideas in here. Yeah, and you probably will discover that there's some stinking good ideas in here. But take them, tweak them, tune them, make them your own, or leave it. Maybe there's certain things with where you're at just don't work for you right now, or maybe they'll never work. That's okay. We mentioned this early on in the beginning. The main thing is how you think about things, which influences the what you do part. Yeah, so spend your effort there. Next, make sure you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. We get accused of that a bunch. Yeah, I think not rightfully so. Because everybody out there that seems to want to like throw rocks trying to humanize our approaches to safety to maintain Orwellian control of traditional safety because stupid employees, if they weren't such children, I would have to treat them like children. I beat you because I love you. It's that kind of thing. Yeah, I only hit my employees because I love them so much and care so much about them. Sure, sure thing. We get accused by those people of thinking that we just want to like burn down like all the great stuff that has worked for us. You have never heard me say that, and anyone that has said that I've ever said that is lying, period. You've never heard any decent hop practitioner in this world say, you know what we need to get rid of is lockout, tag out. We'll just tell people the air doesn't fit, the air is normal, and blame fixes nothing. You do that, you don't need lockout, tag out. No one has ever said that. It's just illogical. It's just dumb. It's just plain dumb. Yeah. So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. If you got something that's working well for you, those traditional things that work really well for you, why in the hell would you throw those away? Why in the hell would you burn those things down? Why would we get rid of stuff that's working well for us? You know, the way that we define human and organizational performance, at least around these parts, is a collection of better ideas, beliefs, and assumptions from diverse and varying sources that we apply through the lens of a core set of principles, those main five HOP principles. Now, some of the point there is, it's not just to roll in like great stuff like HRO. It's not just to roll in great stuff into HOP that like we tend to do, like safety differently or safety two or resilience engineering or human factors or all the stuff that we know. But it's also to say, all that traditional safety stuff that works well for us, why in the hell would we leave that behind? Yeah, well, of course we're bringing that with us. It's also saying, why in the hell would we shut the door to any future innovation? Of course we're not. Yeah, this is a buffet. It's not a this or that. It's just not how it works. So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Keep the things that work well for you. Even I might say, like, I think that thing's dumb. I've never seen that work well. It never worked well for us. Every organization I spend time with, that thing doesn't work. It becomes like horrific and it is not good. And then you got like 20 people over here. And they're like, yeah, it's horrific and it's never worked good for us. But if it's working good for you, and what I mean by working good for you is not, I think it's working good or I built it, I love it, so everyone else loves it. That doesn't mean it's working good. I mean, your people that are using it are actually telling you that it's working good. Yeah, I wouldn't stop doing that. Of course I wouldn't. Yeah, so don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I think that's as much of a rambly disclaimer as I can get out today. Let me get a little bit of cold brew. Yeah, there we go. Old school black Starbucks cold brew. Straight up Trenta. Yeah, amped up, ready to go. So here we go. We've been banging the zero incident drum for like ever. Yeah, it just seems so simple, right? If we just stop having events, we can't have any more events. Yeah. I feel the need to pause here because I've been needing to insert this into a lot of conversations I've been having lately. For no direct reason, but just the feeling, like the feeling that I need to. There's a couple things that I tend to share with people that are like duh moments, but duh things that we need to say out loud because we don't seem to live up to them. The first one that I tend to share is that leaders are people too. Yeah, that's a big one. But the one that I want to share with you here, the reason for this quick pause is this, is that, you know, the stuff outside of work, the world, it's still the same thing when you get to work. The stuff that works and doesn't work in the world works and doesn't work in our work worlds too. We'd like to think that when we cross that magical gate that we are in a different universe of work and how the outside world doesn't count and the laws of the universe doesn't count, that death can never exist in our work world, that the plight of mankind can never, any whatever, insert whatever plight here, all of that stuff, none of that applies in here because we have moved into the work bubble. So everything here is dramatic. No, it's not different. It's just life. Yeah, it's just our world. The rules of the world, the rules of the universe, the rules from God, however you want to put it, the rules of this game that we're living in, life, it's the same inside of our gates, inside of our fences, just as it is outside of our fences. Yeah, and so when we start thinking about this zero thing, it's that La La Land thinking. It's the when we move inside of our little bubble of work, nothing bad can go wrong because we're really good at making things not go wrong. And if we keep moving towards nothing going wrong, then nothing ever can go wrong. And we'll all live in an infinite loop forever, never dying, never getting a scratch, never experiencing anything negative, never experiencing failure. If we just keep aiming for zero and we get to zero, then all will be well. And it's a lie that causes more harm than good. It just never plays out well. I get this a lot from people that are big Zero fans, like big fans. Like they've got the t-shirt and the tattoo kind of fans of Zero. It's just like, well, you know, you've just never seen Zero done right. If you saw our measures done right, if you saw the way that we get to zero right, if you saw zero harm, zero incidents, we aim for zero banner, like whatever slogan your company's put on zero, because I know you had it. Even if you don't have it now, you had it at one point because we had it too. You've just not seen it applied right. If you apply it right, then zero works. Well, I don't know. I mean, I've worked with hundreds of organizations at this point. I've worked with some of the largest organizations on the planet internally, at least in my sector. And we all tried it. And I don't know. We had some of the smartest brains in the world around safety and culture and people and on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And we tried every single which way to make it work right before we got to the point of saying, hey, this doesn't work well for us. Actually, this causes more harm than good because it harms information. It creates silence. People can't tell us the truth. It just doesn't work out very well. Even if we remove all this other stuff, people still, it just doesn't work well. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe I've just not seen it work well. But it seems like most of the people I talk to have never seen it work well. And we pull all that information together. It does exactly what we just said. It creates silence. At the very least, it causes us to know less. We hear some stuff when it's done extremely well, but we still never discover quite as much as we feel that we should with zero in place. Yeah, so it's a real problem, this number chasing. And I know I'm using zero kind of probably more as the surrogate here, because there's a lot of different ways you can go about this, this harming of information, the flow of information within our organizations. But again, a bit of a surrogate, but it's exactly that, right? This number chasing, this focus on output, this focus on changing output by focusing on output. Well, yeah, all of this stuff, this obsession with measure, this obsession with measure and constant, always getting better around that measure, this focus on metricization, I don't know, on turning these numbers into incentivized metrics within our organizations, sticks and carrots and old school stuff that we know doesn't work well for us in the long run. It just doesn't. This output focus is huge, and especially around safety, because it's the focus on what's not happening. It's the focus on the absence of stuff, which gets even weirder. Yeah, it gets even weirder because I'm not going out and looking for something. I'm just going out and trying to make sure nothing bad ever happens. Good luck. Yeah, good luck. Now, stick with me here for a second, because I'm moving towards this idea that we talk a lot about in safety differently, which is safety not being the absence of accidents, but the presence of capacity is a common way that we hear that put. Let me rephrase this a couple different ways. Safety, and I'm just going to scratch out safety out of this one and say success. Success isn't the absence of negatives. It's the presence of positives. You think about the way success plays out in our organizations, in our lives, in work and beyond, right? Back to this just being life. usually a successful life doesn't mean that you didn't experience a whole bunch of negative crap. A successful life usually means that you experienced a whole bunch of negative crap, but you had enough positive stuff on the other side of that to make it successful. You experienced all the negatives that you could imagine throughout life. You experienced all the pain and the problems and the setbacks and the mountains that you get to the top of to only realize that that was just the beginning of the mountain. You're on a ridge. You're not on the mountain. You just climbed the ridge. Yeah, and you get to the top and you're like, oh, God. Oh, my God. Oh, there's more mountains. There's three more ridges. And then I get to get maybe somewhere up near to where I can start the summit, which is another 5 years. We know how life plays out. It's not the lack of that stuff. That's normal. Like, things go wrong, things go sideways, things go half wrong, things don't turn out how we expected. We have operational surprises in our life. We have tragedy in our lives. We have this surprising stuff that kind of happens throughout life. But almost always, when you spend time talking to people that have led, air quotes here, what they would deem to be, in their personal experience, a successful life, they're saying, yeah, all that stuff happened, but the positives outweighed the negatives. I had more positives than I had negatives equals success. I don't think that's all that different at work. We can't control the universe. We can't control everything. We like to think that we can control everything, but we can't control everything. We have the illusion of control around a lot of things that we don't really control, and it's really just kind of luck that's happening a lot there. Yeah, we like to think we can control all that stuff, but the one thing that we can really put a lot of time into controlling is the presence of positives within our organizations. Now, another way to rephrase this, and if you're thinking, well, okay, yeah, I get that, but to give me this in a way that makes a bit more sense at work, this is the way that I tend to share it. This is the way that I find when I'm talking to rooms full of people and they first see this slide and they go, WTF, everybody's been telling me for the past 40 years that zero is success, you know, success and safety. That means that it's zero. Success and safety means that lower numbers equal better. That equals safety, unless around particular things, maybe like observations of more numbers equal better. When I'm getting that kind of glazed over look that you might be experiencing right now, this is the way that I like to share it. The safety is not the absence of negatives. It's not the absence of events. It's the presence of margin. We know that word. We know the margin word. We know that margin word extremely well. If you've been working in an organization for more than a minute, you know margin, and you use margin. If you have ever built a budget, you know margin. I like to ask this question, again, in those sessions, who in this room puts together, maintains a budget? Who in this room does? Now, most hands will go up, especially if I'm talking to leaders. Like, yep, I know budgets. Okay. You do that. How many in this room put together project timelines, plans? They usually have KPIs along those things somewhere in there. Who puts that stuff together? Yeah, and the other set of the hands go up, or all the hands go up. Yeah, we know this question. We know those things. We know those things really well. Let's use the budget as an example. The next question is, when you're putting together your budget, probably sometimes towards the end of this year for the next year, when you're putting that thing together, how often do you build in plus or minus 0% margin on that budget? And the answer is what I heard a couple weeks ago was only if it's your first time. Yeah. Which means never. Only if it was your first time and you learned the hard way. Yeah, you never put in a 0% margin. Of course not. You never put that razor's edge in there. And then that was quickly followed up by another gentleman across the room in this particular session that said, what I put in is as much as I can get away with. Yeah, which is true, right? Why do we do that? Think about that for a second. Why do we put in margin? Now, at some point, you're going to spit out, or somebody in the crowd will spit out something that sounds kind of like this. I put it in there because I know things are going to happen. I put it in there because I know that something's going to get messed up. I'm going to try my hardest, and I know my team's going to try our hardest together to meet that budget. But I know somewhere along the way, the world's going to throw us a curveball. Okay, now we're getting somewhere. We're starting to pour a little gas on the fire. What it means, really, if we want to simplify that, is so that when things go wrong, things will still go right. That's a big one. That's really what we're saying here. Think about that. I don't know if there is a pure, more tactical definition of safety. I know there's a lot of conversation kicked around about this, that, well, you know, this definition of safety, positive, negative, we just tell me the number. Is it four? Four. Okay, I got a goal. It's four. If we only kill four people, that's good. I understand that conversation. But really, in a pure form, in the most meaningful form of a definition, and to me, in my brain, I don't think this is squishy. I think this is really tactical. This definition that, okay, safety means things can go wrong and things will still go well. I think that's about as good as we can get. The world can throw us a curveball. We can have an operational surprise. And people survive. That's huge. In a situation where in the past, without our positives in place, positives that usually sound like safeguards, life-saving controls, robust and air-tolerant safeguards, life-saving controls, where in the past, it would have been death. But because of that, because of the presence of those positives, the things that we inserted into our work, these positives that work in concert with people and their adaptability. There we go. Get words out. I haven't had all my coffee this morning. It's early, y'all. These positives that help work go right or more right, even when it tries to go wrong. Maybe in the past, that event might have been dead, but now it's been reduced to broke arm. That's safety. We like to reduce this down to safety, meaning nothing bad ever goes wrong. And that's just not real life. It's just not the real world. And it will never be the real world. No matter how much we like to think that we'll eventually get rid of bee stings, no matter how much we like to think that we'll eventually get rid of a bruise or a bump, no matter how much we like to think that broke arm is a horrible thing, it's the worst ever, when we don't really think beyond that, that we say, well, we had a control in place which reduced this. Like, that was the worst possible thing that could happen. In the past, the worst possible thing that could happen is Bob would not be alive anymore. We would have unalived Bob, and we would all be at Bob's funeral, consoling Bob's family. But guess what? Positives resulted in Bob breaking his arm rather than Bob being dead. That's safety. Yeah, that feels wacky when we think about all the conditioning that we've had around safety, meaning that nothing bad ever goes wrong. But that's just not true. It's not realistic, and it will never work. So similar to that idea of margin in our budget, margin allows us the room to fall down and get back up. Margin allows us the room to get it wrong and still get it right. This presence of margin, this planning for the world to be the world, because we know the world is going to do the world's kind of things, like it always does, which are usually wacky and screwed up things that are hard for us to even imagine sometimes. Work will go wildly wrong, just like life will go wildly wrong. When the world decides to be like, oh, I'm the world, bro, and do like I'm the world, bro kind of stuff to you, it allows Bob to walk away in a cast instead of in a casket. That's the purest definition of safety that I think I've ever stumbled across. It's not a number. It's not a measure. But it's the presence of positives. It's the presence of positives. The things that we know when we have enough positive in our work world, it outweighs the negative. What it really means is that work can go well even when work goes wrong. Yeah, that's how I like to think about it. Margin. A buffer. It's a fantastic way to start thinking about safety or capacity, safety capacity, if we want to put those two together more broadly. For far too long, we have been hyper-focused on what is not happening. No incidents, no injury. Just because nothing bad happens today, we start to assume that nothing bad can happen tomorrow. Yeah, and then when we get that curveball that life inevitably throws our way, a lot of times we're just lucky. We're operating right on that razor edge with no margin for the world to do, hey, I'm the world, bro, kind of stuff to us. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge for us. Okay, so with a bit of that out of the way, a rant, I guess, a little bit about that. And that wasn't too ranty, was it? Hopefully not. The big question is, how do we do that? That makes sense. But what now? Yeah, understanding the idea, the principle, that's cool. But making it happen, that's where the real work begins. So let's jump into five actions or ideas for actions that you can take to build this genuine safety capacity, this margin, these positives within your organization. Here we go. What now? Action number one. Focus on safeguards and life-saving controls. Supercharge your safeguards and life-saving controls. This is ground zero for margin. This is ground zero for that capacity that we all talk about and we're all trying to seek out. We're talking about the presence of physical, life-saving, air-tolerant controls and safeguards. These are your non-negotiables. These are your critical lines of defense. These are the things that when Sam goes out and does Sam things, they keep Sam from dying. Now, it might give Sam a broke arm. Sam might even get a bruise or a bump or a scrape. Oh, no, it might even be a recordable event. My God, what will we ever do? It might even be that. But guess what? Sam's alive. You did not unalive Sam, which is safety. We took something that would normally kill or maim somebody, significantly kill or maim someone, and Sam got a broke arm. It's recoverable. And again, I say this all the time, and you have probably heard this 400 times on this podcast, but I'm going to say it again. If Sam has a choice between dead and broke arm, Sam is going to tell you to break both arms. Heck, you can even break my legs if you want to. I'll take that. I'll get over that one. I don't get over being unalived. Yeah, I don't get over having my birth certificate revoked. It doesn't work that way. Yeah, I can get over the broke arms and broke legs. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck packed full of a ton of learning focused operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. What now? This week, I want you to go out and I want you to ask some interesting questions. I want you to ask people where the next significant operational event is going to happen in your organization. I want you to ask people questions that sound like, what are the things that give you the heebie-jeebies? What's a piece of equipment that you work with that makes the hair on your arm stand up? When we ask you to go do insert something here, what's the thing that makes you go, oh, God, it's that thing? And I want you to listen. I want you to listen for stuff that sounds like critical risk. I want you to listen for stuff that sounds like shit that kills people. I want you to listen for un or under-controlled sources of energy within your work world. Yeah, go spend time with folks nearest to the work. Ask those interesting questions. Go see stuff. Go talk to them. And listen. Listen. Be curious and listen. Listen for that un or under-controlled energy within your organization. Stuff that puts us to the point of what we would call sticky or critical risk, the stuff that actually will kill people if we don't do something about it. And make sure that you have robust and air-tolerant life-saving controls around those things. This isn't a one-and-done thing. This needs to be a focus for us constantly. There's a lot of great work happening out there around this stuff from people like Dr. Matt Halliwell and the Construction Research something online. So you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to totally butcher it. But like the HECA stuff, right, the high energy control assessment. Look at that stuff. Take a look at those things. This is how we start to really put a dent in critical risk within our organizations. Action number two. What now? Action two. Flip your scoreboard. Yeah, look, we had a really big shining moment in our organization where we decided that we were going to not pursue zero anymore. We had a really interesting time where we were not only focused on recordables and injuries and first aids and all the stuff are in the injury bucket. we did the thing where every call we would read out the days since for every site, you know, days since we had a recordable, but that wasn't good enough for us. We started counting days since last human error. We had recordable clocks. We had human error clocks. Yeah. And guess what? We never learned anything about human errors. Yeah. The days would be like 4,700 days since our last recordable event. Yeah. And that event was just because it was too big. Yeah. To hide. Uh-huh. Yeah, those we noticed that people would leave and come back with bandages and say, no, I did this at home last week. Yeah, we know that song and dance. Flip that scoreboard. For us, we literally tore those scoreboards down. We tore down the day since big digital clocks, and we sent them to recycling. We tore down the human error clocks. And we didn't just tear them down. They were so pointed within our organization that when we finally got to the point to where we got way, way high up in the organization to say, heck yeah, let's get rid of these. I'm with you. We allowed people to tear them down and pull like the full office space move. Remember on the printer, faxer, copier thing? Yeah. So they're like out there beating them in the parking lot and then sweeping them up and then putting them into the recycling bin. But flip this. Look for the positives. It's really hard to count the absence of negatives. It's really hard to set goals around the absence of negatives, really and truly, if you think about it, because we're depending on stuff not happening. But if we flip that to ensuring that we have positives present within our work, especially around work that has critical risk, we just talked about safeguards and controls, look for those ingredients. What are the key ingredients that help us be successful? Are those here? Yeah, are those here? Look at those things because, you know, in the past, the main safety success measure has been the lack of something, the lack of injuries, the lack of incidents. It's like judging your health only by the fact you haven't had a heart attack yet. We need to get out there and focus on looking for those things that help us to create success. If I'm using this health example, I'm not just thinking about the fact that I haven't had a heart attack. I mean, that's good and all, just like not having events. If we're looking at that on the surface, like that's cool and all, like that's great. I'm not going to go, man, I sure wish we had some events. No more than I'm going to say, man, I sure wish I'd had a heart attack so this would tell me something. No, of course not. But if I'm thinking about not having a heart attack, what I'm going to be measuring isn't the lack of heart attacks. I'm going to be measuring the presence of positives, things that sound like Sam got up this morning and got on the treadmill and he walked for 30 minutes. That's a positive. That's good. Once Sam got done with the treadmill this morning, I went over and swung around a kettlebell in my garage and he picked up a couple of dumbbells and did some of that stuff and played with some of those battle rope things. Yeah, that's positive. Sam didn't eat like a raccoon today. That's good. A trash panda. Yeah, Sam didn't eat like a trash panda today. He wasn't, you know, popping up out of dumpsters with pizza and really great Chinese food hanging out of it. Didn't do that. No. Sam had healthy food today. That's the presence of a positive. Those are the things that we need to be looking for. Those are the things we need to be measuring if you're going to measure, because at the very least, at least you're driving the right behaviors. Think about what happens with the lack of things, especially around that recordable thing. We're saying you can't have any of those. So guess what people give us? None of those, even when we have those things. Yeah, so the behavior that we're really driving with that is the hiding of events. The behavior that we start driving, excuse me, with some of those things, especially if you are a safety pro out there and you know this one real well, is we drive effective, creative case management around those things. So it's not even that we're not having those things. It's just that we get better at recategorizing those things, reclassifying those things, and hiding those things. So really, the behavior that we're wanting to see is all the behaviors that makes us not have recordables, which is the positive stuff. But we're focusing on the output. So the behavior that we're actually driving is just those things, the covering up of the output, the changing of the output by case management. And on, back to what I just whispered. If we really want to change the output, we have to focus on the input. And that is the presence of positive, just like our heart attack example. So think about it like this. Just a good couple places to start. How many proactive improvements have been implemented this month? How many pre-event learning teams or learning evolutions have we done this month? I don't think there's a right number there. I'm not saying like we need to set 5. Don't take that away from this. I'm just saying, are we doing it? Are we learning pre-event from normal work? Are we improving pre-event? Are we actually doing those things? That's a pretty good indicator of positive stuff. So how many insightful learning reviews do we do post-event? Are we actually getting where we need to go? Yep, there's a negative that occurred, but we're taking the investment out of it. Yeah, we've already paid. We've already invested. We have to get some return. Are we doing that effectively? What's the percentage of your critical controls? What percentage of critical controls are verified as present and functional? This is getting over into that HECA stuff that, again, you can Google that one. You can dig that one up. It's pretty stinking cool. How many people did we involve this month in co-designing or redesigning tasks to make it safer or better? And on. And I'm just spitballing some stuff here. There's a lot of ways, because people say, well, if I can't measure recordables, what am I going to measure? I just gave you like four. Yeah, and that's just me spitballing, making stuff up. Like, you will find a whole bunch of stuff. Let me ask you this question. This is the question you need to ask when you think about what you should measure. What are the key ingredients of success within your organization? What things need to be present to ensure success? Not only that you are generally successful, but that work can go well when it goes wrong. That's what you need to be looking at, those things. Now, the follow-up question to that is if we measure this, if we put some metric or maybe even some money around making sure that this happens, is this driving the behaviors we want to see, or is it driving behaviors that we don't want to see? Yeah, just a good follow-up question there. Okay, what now? Action three. Become a success bloodhound detective. Insert something here that says something about, you know, being really, really, really focused on success. We're good at picking apart failures. We're really good at that. And you know my spiel on that. I'm not going to give it to you again, because when I say we're good at it, people go, well, we're not good at it. What I mean is that we do it. Yeah, after an event happens, the investigation machine like cranks up. We pull start that like we're gone, and we're pouring time and resources into it. It's happening, and that's important. That's not a bad thing. But what would happen if we put just as much, if not more, energy into understanding why things go right, especially when it's complex, complicated, high-pressure situation, a high-pressure task, a task that involves critical risk, the stuff that actually kills and maims our employees? What if we start looking at those things where it's easy to get things wrong, where things could have easily gone pear-shaped, but they didn't? People created success where there shouldn't be success, interesting successes. What if we invested just as much time into pre-event learning as we did into post-event learning? Whoa, yeah. So this week, find an example of a tricky task, something that maybe should have gone wrong but didn't, and go out and understand that. Sit down with the people involved and buy them coffee, burritos, all that stuff. Yeah, that helps a little bit. But spend time with them and learn from them. Understand how they create success. Yeah, listen for those positive things that they're doing. Find those positives and help make it easier for those positives to happen. Action number four. Don't just force compliance. Work is messy. It's variable. The world rarely, if ever, matches our neat and tidy, perfect procedures just like a glove. And never, right? Like, never, ever. So I think that rules and policies and plans and procedures, they have their place. And I think that when you create rules and policies and procedures and plans with the people that have to use them, they sometimes even are handy. Just trying to hammer people with compliance, rigid instructions, especially where we need people to adapt and figure out, it doesn't help us build that margin. It doesn't help us build that capacity. It often just builds frustration and encourages people to just not tell us where those things don't work. So instead, we need to fuel this capacity, this adaptation, this resilience. This means making sure that our people have time to think and plan and adapt, and that we empower them with positive safeguards and life-saving controls and the right tools for the job and training and education that actually prepares them to be real world adapters and figuring it out, that kind of stuff. That's really why we pay them, right? And we need to back that up with creating an environment where they can tell us the truth when those decisions don't work out so well, so we can better support them over time in that adaptation. This is about building that capacity to manage that variability safely and effectively. So a couple things here. Ask your team straight up. If you could have a magic wand that you could wave right now, what's the one thing? What's the one thing that would make it easier, safer for you to adapt, to support, to handle these unexpected issues effectively out here? More time, better info, a different tool. What does this look like? Are the controls working well for you? Are they not? Are we having to bypass them? More say in how things are planned, how work is built. That's usually a big one. Yeah. And then actually listen to what they say. Yeah. Action number 5. What now? Co-create. We talk about this one a bunch. But the people that know where things are going wrong, the people that know where they have to make do, over-adapt, over-perform, the people that know where work is nearing failure, where things are easy to get wrong and hard to get right, they're the subject matter experts of your organization, of that particular work. They're the folks that actually do that work. Duh, the folks that do the work best understand the work. They know the real hazards. They know their frustrations. They know the workarounds, the shortcuts, the efficiencies that they have to create because the official way just doesn't cut it in reality. Yeah, they also have some pretty freaking brilliant ideas about how to make things a whole lot better, faster, easier, safer. So instead of designing safety solutions for people, we're spending time with adults at work. We do things not to or for other adults. We do things with other adults. Create this stuff with them. If I have to live with something from the organization, my hand should be in creating that something. If you do it to me, it's never going to work well for a whole bunch of reasons. One of them being it's just not going to work because you have no freaking clue. Duh. I have all the clues. Yeah, and when you have some clues, don't get me wrong, but when we can pull our clues together, we get some big clues, some effective clues, some useful clues. Huh. The other side of that is I'm an adult, as we said, and if you try to do stuff to me, I'm just not going to do it. In fact, I'm going to do the opposite, even if I agree with you, because you're not going to do stuff to me because I'm an adult. And when you try to do stuff to me because I'm an adult, I'm going to show you that you're acting like a jackass, and I'm going to prove that to you by doing exactly the opposite of what you tell me to do. I'm going to make it look like I do it sometimes if there's some type of compliance burden, some heavy-handed discipline behind it, but I'm still going to do the opposite because you're an ass. Yeah, yeah. So you can't do stuff to people. When we build stuff together, not only do we get the great operational reality, lived operational reality, know-how that exists nearest to the front line, but then we also get all the other stuff that we have, our answers. Like we know, you know, there's a compliance thing here. And I know some tools because I'll give you an example. I'm a fall protectioner. I know like this company makes this and this. This is easy. Why don't you try this? I've got all that stuff. And when we pull those things together, we make something together that works well for the person that actually has to use it. So pick a task, a procedure, a rule that you know that you've been hearing causes some eye rolling. It's clunky. It's just not working well. And if you don't know where to start with this task, procedure, or something, go ask, like genuinely ask. People always have a few of these that they're willing to share with you. And get that group of folks together. Lay that task out. Lay it all on the table and ask, okay, how can we together make this suck less? How can we make this work better, smoother, safer for you? There you go. Five kind of ideas there for you. Just some thoughts on tactical stuff that you can go do there. The real shift here to how we think about things, it's moving from an organization that's fixated on the absence of negatives to one that actively builds the presence of positives. That's more than a buzzword. It's a fundamental shift in how we think about things, which influences how we do things. Yeah, we've said this like 1,000 times. It demands real deal, genuine curiosity about how work actually gets done. It demands a deep extension of trust towards your people's expertise. It demands seeing your role not as an enforcer of rules, but more of a facilitator, a supporter, a provider of resources that people need to be successful. You can start small. You can pick one of these actions or none of these actions. It might be something totally different. Again, these are just some ideas to throw at you. But just pick one of those things or something and give it a shot this week. Try something this week. Start putting some thought into it this week. The next time that your instinct is to just tell someone what to do or point out a failure, pause. Ask them what they need to be successful. Or explore what made a recent success possible. you might just discover that next presence of positive thing that you're looking for, that next maybe even measure that you're looking for, that thing that you're thinking about, okay, I know TRR is not working well for us. We're not going to stop measuring it, but we need something better, something that actually drives the behaviors that we want to see within our organizations. Yeah, rule number one of turning stuff into measures and metrics, at least make sure that it's not driving like stuff you don't want to see. And go focus on that. There you go. I hope this one has been helpful. We have worked our way through the principles of human and organizational performance. We have worked our way through the ideas of safety differently, the tenets of safety differently. Next up on the list of things to work through here on our What Now miniseries, we're going to work through my 10 ideas. And in fact, we're going to work through, I don't know if we're going to work through all 10 or just select ones. I don't know. But you'll see. It'll be a surprise for both of us. So there you go. But if you need a hand on your human and organizational performance journey, if you're focusing on doing this stuff in real life, in the real world, well, guess what? I am your person, because that's all I do. I focus on how we do this in real life, in the real world, because I've only ever done it in real life, in the real world. Yeah, I've spent my entire life doing this stuff in real life, in the real world. So if that's the kind of person that you're looking for that little bit of help, for to be that advisor within your organization, to teach that workshop in your organization, to come and do that event, to do that keynote, let me know, thehopnerd@gmail.com, or head over to thehopnerd.com/meetsam, and you can discover more about me. You can book a consult, all that stuff over at the website, and be sure to check out Starting Points Operationally Curious Conversation Starters, our Operationally Curious Questions, if you're looking for a way to start to do pre-event operational learning in an easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy, no training required, just get started kind of way. Yeah, thehopnerd.com/SP. Until next time, I love you. I mean it. Can't wait to do this again. Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast and the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help with bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye.